Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. This is a community conference call for the purposes of information only. By attending this call, you do not become our client, and we do not become your lawyers. We are providing you basic information as best as we can based upon the questions that you have posted or based upon the questions you ask. This call is being recorded. If you don't wish your identity to be revealed or if you don't wish to have the details of the conversation revealed, you may want to make up a name for yourself when you talk with me. You can also hang up and not participate in this conversation or stay quiet. That said, the way I'm going to proceed is, as I always do, I'm first going to address the questions that have already been posted. Then I will ask people who have posted questions on immigration forums, which is forums.immigration.com, if they have any follow-up questions. Once that is done, we will then take up new questions, people who have not posted. I hope to be able to take everybody's questions. It doesn't look like it's going to be that many, but there is no way I can stay beyond 3 o'clock, okay? So at sharply 3, I'm going to have to call it off, but again, we'll be back in 2 more weeks. So I do it every other week anyway. That said, let me get on to the portal questions. The forum questions, change of status from L1 to H1, Singh SS. I'm currently on L1B, company-specific visa with my employer. I have quit my job, and November 4th, which is tomorrow, is my last working day with my current employer. But last week, I filed my H1 in premium category. I wanted to know if I can legally stay in the U.S. after November 4th. Yes, you can. Why? Because once you timely file an application for change of status, then as long as that application is not decided, you are allowed to stay in USA. You're not allowed to work, but you're allowed to stay in USA. That is referred to as authorized period of stay. Authorized period of stay. Even if you get an RFE, as long as that application is pending, you are in authorized period of stay. I want to know if I can legally stay in the United States after November 4th. I would have left my current employer and I would not be working. Is it okay not to work? Of course, it's not okay to work. It's fine not to work. In fact, you should not be working. What happens in case of an RFE? So that's all covered. Next question. Thing for U.S. This is a strange issue where a lawyer was disbarred and neglected to tell the clients that he had been disbarred and misled them. So now they have got their immigration file back, and it's very skinny. It doesn't look like there's anything in there. But NVC, National Visa Center, has said that if you have a good reason, it was a reason beyond your control, they will revive the case. Well, this is what you do. You file a complaint against the lawyer with the bar. Even if the lawyer is no longer a member of the bar, just go ahead and file the complaint. Explain what happened to the bar, and then take a copy of that complaint and send it to NVC, asking them to reopen the case. I think you should get yourself a lawyer. That would be the better way to handle it, because even though you can do it yourself, I think you'll be better off, you'll be better off going through a lawyer. You said your friend refuses to file a grievance with the bar because he's a family friend. The lawyer is a family friend. Well, then in that case, you have to start the case all over again, or you can try explaining to NVC what happened and see if they will accept your application without you having filed a complaint against the lawyer. I think it's very unlikely. Okay? Normally, they do want to see something that shows that you're serious about the complaint. Frankly, I think your loyalty is misplaced, because if a lawyer is a family friend, they should have been extra careful with their case, if anything. But anyhow, that's my opinion. Okay? So file a grievance. Otherwise, there is no way we can be sure that NVC will accept your application. Bhati wants to know, porting priority date from employer A to employer B. Okay, company A filed labor cert September 2009, got approved, changed an employer, moved to employer B, who filed PERM, and I-140 was filed. Both PERM and I-140 with B got approved. I-140 filed by employer B was okay. Please note that the employer A did not file my I-140. Well, if they did not file an I-140 within 180 days of the PERM approval, there is nothing left in that case. Okay? So employer A, by not filing I-140 within 180 days after approval has let the labor certification lapse, so it is a non-entity. Your previous employer has not given you anything you can port over to the new employer. Okay? Rest of the questions are irrelevant because you can't do it. There's nothing for you to move. Next question, Geet 30, worksite moved to new location during green card process. This question is extremely difficult to answer, okay? It looks to me that your case can survive because the move is only 33 miles, even though it's a different MSA. Your case should be able to survive because if you look at the Department of Labor regulations and you look at the definition of geographical area of employment, they talk about normal commuting distance. So a position, if it is certified for location A and you move to location B within normal commuting distance of A, you should have your green card survive. I don't see any problem with it. It looks to me it should be fine, but again, I haven't specifically researched every issue involved here. I personally feel you should be able to have your green card survive. Should you be filing for an I-140 amendment before you file the 485? That's a difficult question for me to answer. I would have to research it, but generally speaking, your I-140 and your green card should survive, okay? Next question, SWE82. Dates on I-539 approval and I-94 are different. Filed for a change of status from H1 to H4. So there's a gap. There's a gap. So from January 26th to September 15th, there's a gap. And your new I-94 starts much later. Well, here is the way it typically works. Normally, USCIS cannot give you, in most cases, any status retroactively, except in very, very rare cases, which is called nunc pro tunc approval. So if you look at the regulations, even the regulations say that the approval has to be given going forward from the date of the approval. Now, you see, you file your H4 on January 25th. Okay? They approved it on September 15th, and they started the approval from September 15th. This is the way they typically do it. Now, the question is, should it affect your green card? I don't think so. I don't see how it can affect your green card. If you are concerned because the period in question is more than 180 days, you can always exit USA and re-enter and file your 485 after re-enter. If you do that, Section 245K as in kite protects you, okay? So to be ultra safe, go ahead and before filing the I-485, exit and re-enter USA. BSAK wants to know, is a new LCA and H-1B amendment required for change in client location? Only 7 miles away within the same MSA, the only thing you should have to file is a new LCA. Okay, I don't see any need for an H-1B amendment if the location has changed to only 7 miles. If the location was beyond normal commuting distance, you would then have to not only file a new LCA, you would have to file, in all probability, an H-1B amendment. Okay? So you should file a new LCA in case the client move is delayed. Should I continue working at the previous location? Yes, you should be able to, since both the existing and future location will be mentioned in the new LCA, yes. See, you only have to do an LCA, so you're fine. Spouse on H4 used EAD and son on H4 traveled on AP. Can I-539 change of status be filed along with the H-1B? The problem is, once she has used her H-4, for your son you can do an H-4 extension, no problem. But for your spouse, and I'm assuming you are the husband, and this is the wife we are talking about. For her, the only way to get back into H-4 status is for her to travel outside USA and get an H-4 visa stamp. So filing for an extension, while it can be done, it doesn't really do anything for her. I don't think that's the best way to go. Okay. Negative profitability. Dame says, I'm looking at the change option for changing from EB3 to EB2. I came across negative profitability. What does negative profitability mean? It means the employer is running at a loss. Does that become a rejection criterion for PERM I-140? It can. It can. If this is the situation. Let's say your green card salary for EB2 comes out to be $150,000, and the company is already paying you $150,000. However, they are showing loss on their income tax returns. You'll have no problem because you're already getting paid what you're supposed to be getting paid. Take another hypothetical. Green card salary comes out to be $150,000. The company is paying you $80,000. Now, if they're running on loss, they will not get your I-140 approval. PERM will get approved, but the I-140 will not get approved because they have to show that they have an additional $70,000 that they can give you, and that money must be clear from their tax returns. So to answer your question, it depends. Normally, when a company is at a loss, they can't get I-140 approvals unless they're already paying the employee for whom they are doing green card the amount the employee is supposed to make under the green card. Okay? They see forever, entering USA on a re-entry permit after 18 months in Class C misdemeanor. Okay, this question is complicated, okay? It all depends on, first of all, typically when we have to look at a crime and the consequences of a criminal conviction, we actually have to go look at the law of the state. Typically, this is the way it's analyzed. First, we look at the statute. We look at whether the statute is a felony or a misdemeanor. Sometimes the language can be misleading. There are actually misdemeanors which are more like the definition of a felony than the definition of a misdemeanor. So we have to look at the statute. Then we have to look at whether or not Board of Immigration Appeals has ever interpreted that particular statute in any way other than it being a simple, what is called, petty offense. And if the statute indeed is considered to be a petty offense, we can then be comfortable that this will not be a problem for reentry in most cases. What I would suggest is, can we represent you at the port of entry? Well, I think what you should do is, it's cost prohibitive for you to have us travel outside the DC metro area. You may want to talk with a local lawyer where your wife is going to enter USA and establish a relationship with them. Specifically, you want to talk with a lawyer who does deportation cases, okay? And then talk with them, get their opinion beforehand, and establish a relationship so when, you know, your wife is entering, they can, represent you if necessary. Typically, at the airport, they don't allow much representation, but at least you'll have some clue on what you need to do. Okay? So go ahead and talk with a local lawyer. Asylum and OPT. I'm sorry, I don't do asylum cases. I have no idea how this works. Okay? So you're going to have to talk with somebody who does asylum cases. Alapati wants to know, visa stamping question. I'm on H-1B since 2004. I was on bench for 9 months in the year 2004, and then again in 2005 for several months. So the question is, if I go for visa stamping, and they ask for 2004-2005 returns, the answer is yes, but normally they don't. That's really way, way back, okay? And does that mean an automatic rejection of an H-1B visa? Not at all. Not at all. Because by leaving USA, you have pretty much gone back to wiping the record clean. So, no, I don't think that's an automatic rejection. Unless the employer with whom you are working now, but you're not working with employer A anymore. So therefore, whatever they did does not affect what employer B is doing, or C or D, whoever you're working for now. See, if you were working for the same employer who neglected to pay you for 8-10 months, it'll be difficult to get a visa from them. Okay, visa based upon their job offer. But if you're working for some other employer, and this employer A in the past did not pay you, I don't think that's going to be a problem. In general, though, getting H-1 visa stamping is extremely difficult these days. They are trying to deny as many applications as they can for the simplest reasons, and sometimes not even any reason. Okay? It's most annoying and very alarming. If you get stuck in your home country, I'm assuming that's India, what do you do about your car, et cetera? I guess what you can do is, and you can talk with a local lawyer before you go, you can drop some kind of a power of attorney or something for or in the name of a friend of yours who can then act on your behalf and sell whatever you need to sell. The situation of visa stamping is no better. You asked me, has the situation improved? It hasn't. Lakshmi wants to know, kindly confirm my question about DS-160. I came on F-1, currently on H-1. When I was a student, I worked on OPT. Do I have to talk about the previous work experience? I don't think OPT would quite be called work experience. I guess you could go either way. I'm not sure that question. Typically, I like to answer questions in a way that errs on the side of too much disclosure rather than too little disclosure. Okay? I typically want to mention whatever I have done. And the fact that you did something on OPT or CPT which you were not supposed to do should not be a bar now to issuance of an H-1B visa. That is not a bar. But if you lie about it, and the consulate considers that you should have answered that question differently, then you can create a bigger problem. My advice in most of these cases, Lakshmi, is to err on the side of too much disclosure. Go ahead and tell them. That's my feeling. Manish 13 wants to know, EB2 porting, very important decision. My priority date is 3rd June 2008 on EB2. I work as a consultant. Okay. Current employer says that he will revoke I-140 as soon as I leave him. Can I still recapture my priority date? The answer is no. USCIS has now started saying if the I-140 is revoked for any reason, you cannot carry forward the priority date unless you are covered by AC-21, which means your 485 has been pending 180 days. Okay. Is it true that the EB2 movement will occur in December? There is no way for us to know that for sure, but Charlie Oppenheim is considered to be the authority. However, remember, these projections are based upon statistical data that they collect every month, and then they do projections based upon that, so I don't know how it's going to work out. If there is even a 5% chance, I see no reason for you not to wait. We are already close to December anyway. Also, in case I get current, how long does it take to get an EAD card? Typically 3 months, 90 days. Can I immediately join my new employer? I would advise you to wait 180 days after filing 485. Okay? So that's the way I think you should consider doing it. Wait till December, see if the priority dates jump. I mean, in November 15th, you will know what the priority dates for December are. On December 15th, you know what the priority dates for January are. Okay. Next question is, I graduated master's in computer science, so went into TVU, Tri-Valley University. I was in status when I got my H-1, applied for an H-1 transfer. So no question about out of status. I took all the classes, et cetera. So now he's got an RFE. The question is, what do I do about it? Copy of student ID card, copy of official transcripts. I wasn't living in the area. Well, you know, all I can tell you is that, only yesterday, I finalized a letter for the TVU students. Some TVU students had requested our office to review a letter they were sending to a very respectable member of parliament, Rajagopalji, who's been helping us out. And I just finalized that letter, and one of the points made there was that USCIS has created these impossible hurdles to get status or reinstatement. And really, there isn't anything I can tell you that will help you in getting your status, back, because it looks like USCIS already made up their mind that all these Tri-Valley University students are, out of status. So what we can do is, if you send me an email through the contact us form, I'll send you a sample response that we have used. Maybe that can work for you. Okay, now let me see if there's any questions left. I think we are done. Negative profitability, entering USA, asylum, visa stamping questions, DS-160, voting EAD. It looks like, actually, I'm on a browser that's not very good. I'm using an iPad, so I'm not sure if I've covered all the questions. I think I have. Let me go grab another computer, guys. I'll be right back. Okay, I'll just change machines. Let me just double check and make sure that I've answered all the questions that were posted. L1 to H1, this reporting, I've answered this. AR-11 form questions. For some reason, they didn't show up on my... These four or five questions from Karthik, he's posted several times the same questions. They didn't show up on my iPad for some reason. Huh, I wonder why. Or maybe they were deleted. I don't know. Let me just answer them anyway. So, first of all, when somebody else is on F1, they don't have to fill out AR-11. They have to inform their school that they have changed their address, and then the school updates the address in the service. Okay? So I think Karthik just talked with me before he before this conference call started. So when you are a student, you don't have to file an AR-11. I made people who were stuck in the TVU situation file AR-11s because their service entries had been misrepresented, it appears, to the government. That's why I said file AR-11. But normally, you do not have to file AR-11 while you are on student status. That said, I'm pretty much done with the questions that had been posted. Let me see if we can go back into our... okay, I'll just close this machine. I don't need this. Let me get back with my old machine. Okay, let's see. Now, folks, people who have posted questions already or who have follow-ups on the questions that have been posted on the forums, press *5. No new questions, only questions that have been already posted. *5. Press *5 on your phone. Press the star button, then number 5 on your phone. *5. Okay, it doesn't look like anybody from that group has a question. All right, any questions at all, *5 your phone. Any questions at all? Okay, 1, 2, 3 questions. One question, two questions. Huh. Look, if you press *5 more than once, the question goes away. So right now I have only two questions. Only two questions. Well, let me take these first then. Now there's only one question left. Okay, let's start with the one that is left. Okay. Area code 954, go ahead, please.
Right, Mr. Rajiv. I had actually posted this question about 2 weeks ago, but I missed the last conference call. It has to do with conversion of H4 to F1 for my son. And I wanted to know...
Did you listen to the recording of the last call? Because we always record these calls.
I tried to, but my computer wasn't very clear, so I couldn't...
Question? I'll try to answer it. Go ahead. But, you know, normally you should just focus on the calls that have been recorded. But go ahead. What is your question?
Then he had to do with converting from H4 to F1 because of the retrogression of the priority date, and my son basically is on H4, but I'm trying to activate my EAD. And if I do that, he would become out of status, so I'm trying to get him on F1 as a student. But then my question is, what happens when my priority date becomes current? Would I be able to get him back on my application so that he can get his green card as well?
Let me understand this. You are talking about your son, right?
Yes.
Okay. What you're saying is, if I go from H1 to EAD, he will no longer be on H4. You're right.
Okay. Correct, yes.
Then you want to know, if I convert him to F1, and later on, when the priority date becomes current, can I still put him on my green card? The answer is yes, you can, as long as he is still a child, as long as he's still under 21.
Okay.
Okay. So it is not necessary for a derivative beneficiary, such as your son, to be on H4 or your derivative non-immigrant visa in order to get green card through you. They can even be on H1, independent status.
Okay.
Okay. As long as they meet the definition of a child, there is absolutely no problem what status they are on. There is one little twist in this thing. USCIS has never quite made it clear what they consider to be the status of an F1 student who applies for an I-485. Okay? We know if you have an H1 and you file 485, you're still on H1. No problem. We know if you're on H4, you do it, you're still on H4. No problem. They've never mentioned the same thing about F1. They've said they are both mutually inconsistent. But for the time being, forget that issue. Talk to your lawyer about it when you come close to filing it. I don't think it's a major problem, but double check with your lawyers. Look, my son is on F1. Do we have to worry about anything? We are filing 485. There's nothing to worry about. The bottom line is either he's on F1 or he's on 485 AOS pending. Both are good statuses to go to school on, and if he gets his EAD, he can also get tuition assistance and whatever else he needs.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I've got now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hands up. Guys, we have about half hour. I will do the best I can. I think we have enough time. It usually doesn't take me that much time to go through 7, 8 questions. So let me start with, in the order of time you logged in, area code 803. Go ahead, please.
Hi, sir. This is Geet. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. I posted actually a question on the immigration forum, and you answered it. I had a follow-up question. I messed up the star 5 thing. Sorry about that. But the question was about that worksite move for the green card thing.
Right. If the move is only within the same 33 miles or something, I don't think it should be a problem, even if it is a different MSA. I haven't specifically researched it, but I do recall that this was a simple enough situation. And also, because your employer is willing to reopen an office if necessary, overall, I don't think it's going to be a big problem for you. Talk with your lawyers. They should be able to figure this out.
Okay. The only question I had was for that commutable distance thing, is there something we have to provide them as a proof? Or
I do. I actually give them a printout of Google Maps.
Okay. Okay.
What I do is I enter the address of the old place in Google Maps or MapQuest. Then I enter the address of where you are going to be, and I give driving directions.
Okay.
And I give a printout of that.
Okay, and that is done along with the 485, or I mean, is...
That's where your lawyers have to research it, whether they should be filing an I-140 amendment at the same time or not.
Okay. And
right?
Then once you do it, then it's basically up to them to accept it or reject it.
I think you're going to be fine. If it's done done right, I think you're going to be fine. Not to worry.
Okay. Right. Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all your help.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Wow. I cannot get... Okay, here we go. Next question is area code 732. Go ahead, please, 732. Area code 732, go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a question. Like, I filed my... form in 2007 in EB3 category,
okay.
And then I filed 140 and 485 in July 2007.
All right.
But recently my company filed in EB2 category in 2011, so
all
that
right.
form has been approved in EB2 category.
Exactly.
So now what we should do, like should I, when I file I-40, should I file I-440, 485 again, or can I use the previous one?
No, you'll file I-140 again. I-140, you have to file again.
Yeah, I-140, I will file again.
I-140, you have to, and you have to file it within 180 days of PERM approval. Once,
right.
Once the new I-140 is approved, you can request USCIS to put that on top of the existing 485.
Okay, so I don't need to file I-485 again, right?
No, you don't. You don't have to file a new 485, but you have to file a new I-140.
Yeah, because my lawyer is saying we have to file I-485 again, so that's why I was confused.
No, they are misinformed. There is no such requirement.
Yeah, because according to her, she was saying that if we take the old 485, then this is a new file and that's the old file, and for administrative purpose, it takes more longer. So it's better to file new I-485. That's what.
No, sir, we have done hundreds of cases like this. Never had an issue.
Okay, so after getting I-140, we just need to request to interfile with old 485, right?
Absolutely. And by the way, somebody had asked me this question that these days, I hear you don't even have to request. USCIS does it automatically. That is true. USCIS has told us that they do monthly sweeps for I-140 approvals, and they will give you the best priority date that you're entitled to automatically.
Okay. So basically, we just need to get provide the new old A number, and that will link to the...
Absolutely. You got it. You already have. You've done good research. Yes, that's exactly the way it is.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Everything is linked by A number.
Okay. So basically, just when we apply I-40, we send the letter for request, like to
that
link with
correct.
The old day.
That is
okay.
Correct. That's all you need.
Okay. Thank
Good
you
luck,
very much.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Another area code 732. This one is 732400.
Hi, Rajiv.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Rajiv. My question is, I currently was on an H-1 till about mid of last month. I came to India for my H-1 renewal, and, my H-1 was rejected. However, my wife is also on an H-1, and she's here with me, but her H-1 was approved. Now, the next step for me was, either I reapply for my H-1, or I apply for an H-4 instead.
Yes. What you should do, in my opinion, is because H-1s are so difficult to get stamped, just get an H-4 and come back.
Okay.
And then when you get here, apply for an H-1 again.
The only concern here is usually, for guys to get an H-4, raises a lot of flags in terms of,
I don't believe
so.
Do
and stuff like that.
I don't believe so.
Okay, fair
now,
enough.
Let me tell you another thing. If you can get an H-1 for in-house job instead of a client-side deployment, that should be just as good as getting an H-4.
Yeah, my wife has an in-house. I was on
in-house jobs are easier now.
Yeah. And I have so the H-4 interview, I have it on Tuesday, coming Tuesday.
Go ahead and try to get it. Let's see what they say.
Okay. Do you think I should, have my wife come along with me, or do I
have to?
Should I just
there
go by
no
myself?
Reason. There is no reason. unless you are scared of the interview and you want
no,
to
I'm not, but you know, these guys, they tend to just, for no rhyme or reason, apparently that's what it seemed like. I mean, you know, for the H1 renewal, he had no reason, but he just wanted to reject.
Oh, I know, I know. We have brought this up to the attention of many of the higher authorities. So far, no good action. We'll see. But yeah, you know, if she is not doing anything, let her come along. But that's not required. There's no such law
okay.
that says she has to come along.
Fair enough. Yeah, that was my one concern. And any specific documents I should carry other than the
Unki, just go to their website, whatever list they ask you to bring, that's what you should bring.
The usuals? Yes, yes.
Yep.
Okay. And they wouldn't ask me, or do you think that's a question like, you know,
let
you
them
were
ask
on an
whatever
H1
they want.
And it was rejected and all of that?
No, let them ask whatever they want. It's fine.
Okay.
You answer every question truthfully. That's all you can do.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Good luck.
According to you, though, the chances are more on an H4 rather than reapplying for the H1 again.
That's my belief, yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, this was easy. We only have three more questions left. Area code 208. Go ahead, please. 208. 208-301. Go ahead. Okay, I'll leave you unmuted. I'm not sure where you are. Area code 718, go ahead. I wonder if you guys can hear me. Area code 718.
Hi, this is Bisak.
Hi, how are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. Thank you very much.
Are you area code 718 or 208?
718.
Go ahead, please.
It was a question regarding the H1 amendment.
Right, because in your case, the client location had changed only 7 miles, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so, no problem.
It seems
no problem.
Was, in some of the forums, they have mentioned California Service Center was issuing NARS, intent to revoke, because...
They can't do anything. That's nonsense. How can they revoke? That's against all the laws. I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Oh, okay. One more question regarding the, if the spouse has used EAD, she can do a 539 change of status.
Well, she can. They, ideally, this is the way it should work. They will issue her a 539. They'll give her an H-4, but no I-94.
Oh, still she has to go out.
But
there.
You don't need that. Why? See, remember, there is a difference between H-1 and H-4. When you go for H-1 visa stamping, you need to have USCIS approval of the H-1 in hand.
Right.
Otherwise, you can't get a visa.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
That's not true for H-4.
Okay.
H-4, you only need H-1 approval and no approval from USCIS. You just go get a visa.
Right. Okay.
So why spend $600, $700 to get an H-4 that's not worth anything?
Right. If it doesn't have an I-94, then...
That's right. So you're going to have to go to the consulate anyway. And if you go to the consulate, you don't need the approval anyway.
Right. But
okay?
If the son has traveled on just the AP and not used the EAD,
yeah, his son is not a problem. Traveling on AP does not convert him to, he's still on H-4 as far as USCIS is concerned.
Even if he has traveled on
AP? Even if he travels on
AP.
That's what they said. There's a memo. It's actually,
okay.
If you go to immigration forums and do a search
right.
for Cronin, C as
yes,
Charlie,
yes.
R-O-N as in Nancy, I-N as in Nancy, Cronin Memorandum.
Right, okay.
You should be able to pull that out.
Okay.
It's a memorandum from 80s. It's still good law.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck to you, sir.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. I have two more questions. Let's go to area code 469. Go ahead, please. Area code 469.
Hi, Ajay. I posted the first question on the change of status from L1 to H1.
Right.
My question was, the follow-up question was, could I start immediately as soon as I get my approval for the H1?
If you get your H1 approval along with an I-94, you can start right away, yes.
Okay, great. And
I'm assuming that you have asked for start date as right away, not sometime in the future.
Yes, the right away start date.
Yep, absolutely. You can start whenever the start date kicks in.
Okay. Second question I had was, I filed for it like about 9 working days away and 11 calendar days. at the Vermont Service Center.
Right.
Is it usual to be this late? Because all of my friends have received some kind of a reply within 3 to 5 days.
I don't think you can pinpoint times down with that kind of certainty. So that's, I won't worry about it.
Okay. And just to add one more thing, like I messed up between, I am in CST right now and the call is in EST, so I messed up between the time zone. But just to confirm that I could wait for my H-1B decision, right?
That is correct. You can wait for your H-1 decision. If the H-1 was filed before the L-1 expired or the status expired, you're entitled to wait for the H-1 decision. Even if there's an RFE, there's no problem.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. Area code 303. Go ahead, please. 303.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Raji. This is regarding the TVU question that I posted.
Right. What you do is just send me an email. I'll send you the format that we are using.
Okay.
To respond to questions like this, and you can use it.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I'm actually talking in for my friend, but he's kind of worried about two things. He says he's in status all the time. He has transcripts and everything, but what are the chances of approval with the I-94? Is new H-1B?
Very difficult to say. Very, very difficult to say. I can't predict that.
Will they cancel the old H-1? Because in the RFE, it says that the VO said the previous H-1 was given an error.
They can cancel it. He will have to go for a visa stamping. It is within the rights of USCIS to cancel an erroneously approved case, yes.
Okay, so have you faced any similar cases where the students got approved in VTU with a similar RFE? Or?
You have to excuse me. We do a lot of cases. I don't know off the top of my head if we have gotten any approvals like that.
Okay, so I'll just go ahead and send you a mail and you will forward me the format.
Yes, of course.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, the last question of the day is area code. Oh, there's one more. Guys, we're going to run out of time pretty soon. So let's do two more questions. Area code 925.
Hey, Rajiv. This is Yasser. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Yasser.
Thanks. So I believe I've got a much simpler question than the rest of the callers. I'm a U.S. citizen. I was naturalized last year, about 18 months ago. And I want to file for permanent residency for my parents. They are visiting me right now. And I think their current I-94 is valid until the 24th of November. I have two quick questions here. Would it make sense for me, I mean, what would your advice be for me to file the I-130 and then, them file the 485 right now, or wait for them to go back and then do it? The second question is regarding their birth certificates. My dad is 76 years old, and he does not have his birth certificate. They don't have too many people around who can vouch for the fact that he was born, on the particular date and time.
Yes, sir. Let me wrap this discussion up in one simple sentence. If you can afford to hire a lawyer, get yourself a lawyer. Normally, family-based cases, we don't advise people to get lawyers because these are very simple cases. Right. If you say, Rajiv, I have time, I can do some, due diligence and I can take care of it myself, I don't see any need for a lawyer, okay? The first issue here is this. Can I file for somebody who enters non-immigrant visa a green card? And the answer is yes, if there is no preconceived intention. When they entered, they had no intention to change to green card. Now they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
Normally, for immediate relatives of U.S. citizens, it's not a big deal. But that's a potential issue that lurks in the background. To prevent that issue altogether, you can file the I-130 now, let them go back, and let them come through consular processing. It should be done within a year anyway.
Okay?
If you want to be a little bit more aggressive, and I think it's not too aggressive, it's not a big deal, you can file for I-130, 485 together.
And would that mean that they have to stay in the country until the 485 is approved?
Only until the advance parole comes. You will also apply for advance parole. That takes 5-6 months. When they get the advance parole, they can travel.
And when I ask for an extension on their visit,
you don't need to. If you apply for I-130, 485 before November 24th, you're okay.
Okay, I don't have to apply for anything. And then they wait until they get advance parole, and then they go back and wrap up whatever.
Precisely. Okay, now, the question, more tricky question is of the birth certificate. Well, for the birth certificates, what the law requires is this. If you cannot get a birth certificate, which country are you from, Yasser?
From India, yeah.
Okay. So what you will do is, you will have to get a certificate of non-availability from the municipal corporation or the village panchayat of where they were born.
Okay.
Simple letter. We have no record of such a birth. Okay. With that, you will need two affidavits from people who were alive at the time your parents were born.
Okay.
If you want the format of the affidavits, send me an email to the contact us form. I'll send you the format.
Okay.
Okay. But ideally, if you want to avoid any undue hassle, get yourself a lawyer. It's not that big a deal. You want to do it yourself, and something gets messed up, you can always get us involved or get a lawyer involved.
Okay.
You have several ways to go. Personally, I don't think a lawyer is needed in most of these cases. The only wrinkle being the birth affidavit, the birth certificate. We're not going to do much in that anyway. We're going to show you the affidavit of birth, get you to get that signed from two people. The affidavit that I'll send you is pretty self-explanatory. Just use it. I have no problem sharing it with you. So, it can be done by you. Why don't you do this? Go ahead and get the affidavit from us, review it, review the paperwork that goes with I-130, 485. Something makes you uncomfortable, go get yourself a lawyer. Otherwise, just... And in fact, if you get a lawyer, get yourself a lawyer locally where you are. Might make things a little easier. Because if your parents end up going to an interview, the lawyer can go with them.
Oh, okay. Good deal.
Okay?
All right. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Right.
Okay, guys, I guess I have two more questions still. Area code 732, go ahead, please.
Hello, Rajiv. This is Manish here.
Hey, Manish, how are you?
Yeah, hi. I posted a question and you answered about the porting, and that was regarding my wife.
Mm-hmm.
The
porting where the I-140 is not approved.
No, the I-140 is approved, but her... current employer is going to revoke the I-140 if she leaves.
Ah, if it's revoked, then it's gone. Yes, of course.
It's gone. Okay. And then the other news about the Charles thing, about the December, and you said even if there is a 5% chance,
think you should take it, see what happens.
Okay. So now the other thing is, like, if you said EAD will come in three months, and what if we get an RFE on the 485?
It takes a few months for the RFE to come, and if you do, what then? What bothers you about that?
The thing is, like, my wife is planning to join them, and we are planning to tell the employer that, okay, we'll join once we have the EAD or once we cross
that's,
the 6 months
that's
period.
That's not safe enough, Manish, because the problem is once 180 days have crossed after the 485 has been pending, then you can do whatever you want. Join a similar
by
job anyway.
AC-21.
Right. Join a similar job anyway. But until that 180-day critical date passes, if they revoke the I-140, you've lost your case. So really, filing and 180 days is what you need.
Okay, filing and 180 days. So once I cross 180 days, even if the employer revokes I-140, it's fine, right?
It's yours to keep as long as you're doing a similar job.
Okay, so the only risk is still that 180 days period.
That is correct.
Okay, and if we get an RFE, basically it takes a few months and then we get an EAD and then we can shift.
Yeah, RFEs, we don't care. Once 180 days have passed, RFEs don't bother us.
Oh, you don't care even if, okay.
Yeah, 180 days passed,
the
title
also,
to your name. Yep. The only thing you are required to show at that point of time is that your jobs are same or similar.
Even if you get an RFE and we don't have a EAD?
Absolutely. Remember, we've done hundreds, if not thousands, of these cases.
Okay. And what do you see the chances of getting, like, June date, in December or the January?
I have no idea. how it's going to work out. I mean, like I said, Charlie Oppenheim is the man. Definitely no question about that. But does he have his facts all straight? Probably does. Would the situation change by December? It can. But I don't know how it's going to play out. I really can't predict. They are taking bets in my office. We are all about 50.
Yeah, because the thing in from my point of view is that my wife, she is pregnant also 4 months.
Yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
Yeah, so that's why we want to take a decision whether we should wait or whether she should join the full-time job.
You're so close to the end, I would wait.
We'll wait? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, guys, the very last question of the day. Let's go to area code 208. Go ahead, please, 208.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ashish. I spoke to you in the last call also. I had another issue now. I wanted to ask, can a person be issued multiple visas, be a business visa as well as F2 visa?
It happens. Technically, what happens, Ashish, is when you go for, let's say you have a B visa and you go for an F2 stamping. Technically, if you look at the regulations of the Department of State, as I recall, they are supposed to revoke all existing visas before they consider the application for a new visa. As a practical matter, they often don't. Actually, most often they don't. So you can be in a situation where an F2 has been issued and a B2 is already stamped. In that case, if something goes wrong with the F2, can you use the B2? Sure. Why not? It's still valid.
No, but at the time of entry, what I'm going to tell at the port of entry, is it I have to tell clearly whether I am entering on B2 or whatever the business visa is, or is it F2?
You have to tell them what visa you're entering on.
Okay. And then they can still make the distinction. So what you are saying is if I have multiple visas and if, for example, if I were to apply for F2 first, I get F2 first and then afterwards I go to business visa. And then I have the business visa also. First thing is, how much length the visa is given?
That's very variable. I can't really answer that question.
That is variable.
Yes, B2 can be as little as 3 days. My first B2 was only for 3 days. And it can be as much as 10 years. F2 is usually coextensive with the status of the F1 holder.
Does it depend on the letter of intent that the company provides? Is it dependent on that?
Partly that, partly the question of the consular officer.
Okay. Okay, so you mean to say that, I can still get that. So now my next question would be, should I apply for B2 first to get the F2, or should I apply F2 first in order to prevent the F2?
I don't think you should mess around with too many visas. Just apply for the one you want to use. If that gets
see, the point is that the point is I was earlier planning to apply for F2 visa, and that's why we contacted you last week. Now there is a change in the what the business intention is. So they have a requirement in US, and then I am in my cooling off period of H1B.
Then wait, you're not applying for a B2, you're applying for a B1.
Okay, B1, yes. So if I am applying for a B1, what will happen is my cooling off period will get extended.
If you want to visit for B1 purposes, you should apply for a B1.
Okay. But then after 3 months, when the assignment will be completed, or after 3 weeks the assignment will be completed, I'll eventually return back to India.
You can apply for a change of status from B1 to F2, or you can apply for an F2 from a neighboring consulate.
Okay. So if I apply for a change in the status, would that be issued right away?
You can also ask the consulate. You can tell them, this is the situation I'm facing, guys. I'm going to, for 3 months, I'm going to be doing this, but then I want to stay as an F2 holder. Tell me, should I be just applying for an F2 and forget about this 3 months of time? It doesn't hurt to ask them. You can even send them an email before you go in.
No, but You are talking about a situation in which like the counselor guys are very helpful.
They are very helpful.
I don't think that happened in Chennai, India.
They respond to all emails. Let me correct you there. Those
okay.
days are gone. They do respond to all the emails. Now, the response you get may not be complete, may not be good enough, but at least you have tried. And that itself is something good to have on your side. We correspond with them all
okay.
the time. They respond fairly well.
Yeah, you guys are attorneys. That's why probably like you know, they apply.
Yeah, can you hold 1 second, please?
Yeah.
Hello, Ashish?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay, I think I lost you. Hello, Ashish?
No, I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
No, they do respond. Don't.
Yeah, nothing.
See, even the fact that you tried goes to show that you have tried your level best to do things the right way. So nobody can point fingers at you tomorrow saying you're misusing a visa.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I would do it. Guys, those who have your hands up at the last moment, I'm not going to take any more questions. This is the last set of questions I'm taking, so sorry, can't do any more. I have to leave at exactly 3 o'clock. Yeah, Ashish, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, I understand, like, you know, making an intention is all right, but the point is when you go to the visa stamping, these guys don't entertain anything. Like, I remember I had my mom, like, you know, applying for a visa, and then...
Wait.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that's why I just send them an email before you even go in. Just say I have a situation
okay.
in which I intend to engage in some B1 type activities for 3 months, but then I'm going to, after I report back to my office, I'm going to stay on F2. I'm not going to work in USA. Okay? Now, which visa do you want me to apply for? B1, F2, or one, or other, or both? I mean, what do you want me to do?
Okay.
That way, you have at least made your intentions clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Rajiv.
Bye-bye.
Hi, thank
folks.
You. Bye-bye.
Good talking with all of you. Sorry, I can't take any more questions. I know there are hands up right now, even now. But you guys have to really be more disciplined. Please post on forums. Anything that you post on forums, I'll make sure it gets answered the same day when we do the conference call. Otherwise, we'll be back again Thursday following the next one. Thank you for being here, and bye-bye.